from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. You can always listen to us right here on 99 FM ESPN or 680 AM. But if you're not near a radio dial, you can keep up with 92.9 by downloading the Odyssey app. We're always there. We're streaming free. No subscription necessary. You can even rewind if you missed a segment. You want to go back and listen. Just go download the Odyssey app. We're right there for you. Stick around, and you can't miss anything. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week is, of course, Phil Stukenborg, longtime writer at the CA, former associate athletic director over at the University of Memphis, Memphis legend, CBHS grad. Phil, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
All right, Phil, let's tell what we got. Tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. So there's a couple of things that I've been noticing, and it feels like to me, even as the Olympics have gone on, we're now well into week two, it feels like the interest is still there. And I kind of want to go through why that might be, and I really want to explore, because I think at this point it's undeniable when the numbers have stayed consistent between 30 and 40 million people a night, and I get it, it's NBC, and I get it, it is a special event that happens once every 4 years. But typically, we would see something of a drop-off, and we really haven't. The numbers have stayed really consistent, so I want to see if we can pinpoint why that might be, and if there's anything that we could learn, because to me, one of the bigger issues that impacts us as sports fans is, what the hell's going on with college athletics? And whether or not people want to admit there's a crisis, if it's not a crisis, we're verging on a crisis. And to me, there's some things I want to explore and see if perhaps there could be some lessons. Normally, Tim Murray would join us. Tim's coming back from vacation, so he's spinning a lot of plates. We're going to welcome David Cobb to the program. Cobb will join us at 2:35. We'll get his thoughts on the college football rankings, the coaches poll that came out. Phil, I did figure out exactly what USLBM is.
Tell me.
It is apparently a big building supply company. It seems like a nationwide. I think it's like the equivalent of like good old fashioned like U.S. Steel. Like once it could be the U.S. Steel once upon a time, but it seems like they're big time suppliers. I feel like the fact that it took me that long to figure it out, probably not great, but maybe that's why they're getting into it. They want to get their name out there. So we'll talk some of that with Cobb. A few other things from college football. We'll get into the list. Team USA, the men's basketball team, set to take on Brazil in about 25 minutes or so. I know some people had said that tip-off was at 2, but it looked like to me that it was going to be closer to 2:30. So that will be the final of the quarterfinals. So far, we've had Serbia move on, we've had France move on, and we've had Germany move on. And the U.S. will, presumably, if they beat Brazil, they will take on Serbia in the semifinal, whereas France and Germany set up another semifinal. Pretty good game between Serbia and Australia, as well as France and Canada. Talk about that. Hard Knocks returns tonight. Brandon Ayuk might be actually close to getting something done that I honestly did not think would happen, at least this year. We got some fights at training camp. That's always fun. The Athletic has their college football freaks list out, and a few other things to get to as well. Bounce around the NFL as well. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think, Phil, this is kind of where I want to start, because I think the Olympics is... I find it to be an interesting case study, because with the exception of a few sports, basketball in particular, really men's and women's basketball, it's a lot of sports that were, and I guess soccer to a certain degree, but it's more so with women's soccer than it is with men's soccer, because with women's soccer, it's considered a world event where the best players play. Whereas with men's soccer, it's largely viewed as, hey, it's an under-23 event. Yes, you can have three players that are above 23, but it's not viewed in the same respect as the World Cup or any of the big world tournaments, national tournaments, whereas it is so with the women. But oftentimes, it's a lot of sports that, A, we don't really care about. B, we may not even really care to know about, but, like, I don't know, it's on, and we're kind of interested. I mean, I don't particularly care about fencing, but I did find myself, when it was on, I was like, all right, I'll see what's going on here.
How about kayak cross?
I thought that one had a chance to catch on.
Yeah.
Because it actually is pretty fun. I still can't quite figure out the rules of it. Like, what are the deal with the gates? Like, and it feels like you can miss a gate and then just say, like, screw it, I'm just going on. And I guess you take a deduction. The one that I got a look at last night that I know TV executives were excited about, but I'm not sure that it's going to deliver. I'm a little unsure about the rock climbing. Now, I know there are three different forms of it, but the one I watched last night was, I kind of just watched some guys and gals go up like 10 feet and then kind of like lean to the left. And I was like, I'm not sure what I'm, is this being scored? Is this, like, there was a clock too, but they weren't racing. And so normally I'm pretty good at, if I watch something for about 20, 25 minutes, I can kind of figure it out.
Where was that show?
That was on,
not USA.
For those that have DirecTV, that was on USA Alternate. So if for the DirecTV subscribers out there, you have 242, but then you have 242-1, 242-2, that was on 242-2. So, but I think where most people end up watching a lot of these obscure ones is Peacock. Yeah. It seems to me that's where they're kind of keeping up. But to me, there is something clearly happening in the sense that a large portion of people do care about this and are still watching it. And maybe it's a byproduct of several things, but I kind of want to go through perhaps what might be going on, because to me, there's a few obvious things that could be explained. Also, the reality is it's probably not one specific thing. It's probably some combination. Chris Harrington used to say when you were making drawing conclusions about the NBA's TV ratings being down, usually just about everything you could come up with might have some small impact. And the reality is it's probably some of this. But here were the ones that came to the top of the mind, and I'm curious to know how you feel about it. I think, number one, a huge part of this is that Paris is a place that's cool to look at.
Absolutely.
Paris has been kind of a star. Like, one of the dumb things that I love, when they toss it to the studio, and then you see, like, the Google map, and they're showing us where they're going. Mm-hmm. Like, I find that to be fun. Like, oh, okay, here we go. We're going down the Seine. Now we're in North Paris or in South Paris. Okay, we're in Lyon. And it seems to me like they've done a great job also of using the iconic venues and using, like, iconic places in Paris, featuring them, and it gives us something else to look at. So to me, you could make the argument the city matters.
and it has from the start. From the beginning, when they had the flag ceremony, to me that was as captivating as any opening of the Olympics.
I agree. Because, and I think it was smart because, and I don't know if it's something that other cities can replicate, because there is one thing about when you take, you know, when you take the teams down the Seine, like, you're going to just have all these iconic visuals and whatnot. And so I don't know if it was necessarily the idea of, okay, let's take them down the river or take them down a waterway, and that's what everybody's into. No, it was the fact that, like, you were taking them down the Seine, which has all these unbelievable visuals, and it was really cool to watch. I agree with you on that. I don't know if that would explain keeping our attention for this long, though. Is that fair?
No, that's fair. Again, when you get to the competitions, and you had, if you want to talk about what captivated people, you had not only the story with the women's gymnastics and Simone Biles, then you start to have, you know, people that are, you know, that have breakouts. And I think people are captivated by that, too. You start following the pommel horse guy or Noah Lyles. I mean,
Nedorosic? Is that Steven Nedorosic? Is that right?
That's him.
Yeah, I mean,
Clark Kent.
He has clearly been the breakout star.
He has. Yes. But that, then, you want to watch.
Correct.
You want to see him in the stands watching Simone Biles. You start to just develop a storyline.
That brings me to the second possibility. I do think this Olympics has been greatly helped by the fact that we do have American stars that we actually know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any debate. The gymnastics has been greatly lifted by the fact that we know who Simone Biles is. She has been the star. It allows you to get exposed to other stars.
Yes.
And I Suni Lee, obviously, to a certain degree, but not to that level. But I do think the fact of having stars has helped. In swimming, you have Ledecky. Caleb Dressel to a lesser degree, but still, it's a name that we've watched compete. We know, and it's like, okay, this is the rhythm. And then obviously with basketball, these are our NBA and WNBA stars. We know their names. I think it's helped. I'm still not 100% convinced, because even with Lyles and the 100, I think there's something unique about track that we just are always going to want to watch people run fast. Like, I don't really, like, the 100 being as close as it was, I don't feel like it was such an event because Lyles won. It felt like it was such an event because it's like, oh my God, like, look how fast these guys are. And I credit Michael Johnson, went on the highlights show that Kevin Hart and Kenan Thompson have been doing. And the first night, he even laid it out almost exactly how it went. He's like, when they were asking what's the track event that you're looking most forward to, and he's like, I didn't think I'd say this a couple weeks ago, but it's now the 100. And he laid it out. He goes, it's not just Lyles. It's the fact that we've got five or six guys that all have very, very similar times, and it's not, like, it's a race. And so I do think there's a certain element of the stars, I think, help get us in the building, but I'm not sure that's what, like, has kept us.
No, that's true. And as you see their performances, as you learn the sport, as you watch men's volleyball.
Yes.
That's something you don't see it, but when you watch that athleticism, to me, that's kind of captivating.
So I got this exposure when I went to college, because I went to college at Pepperdine. And when I found out the two, like, when everyone talks about going to California, like, the culture shock, and it's, I think everybody means kind of like values or, you know, how you, worldview. I was like, no. The two biggest culture shocks to me were the two most significant athletes on campus were the men's water polo team and the men's volleyball team. That was a culture shock because I was not used to that. Well, then I started figuring out, I never really got into water polo. That one, it's one of those sports where I acknowledge what they're doing is remarkably impressive. Like, treading water and trying to be competitive for that long is remarkable. With that said, like, when you just, like, watch it as a viewing experience, it just looks like people moving slowly and then trying to struggle to throw. So it never caught on. But you are 100% right about men's volleyball, because I'm sitting there going, like, volleyball, like, that's what the girls do during the winter. Like, it didn't quite. But then I started figuring out what men's volleyball players were actually, like, what athlete group constituted it. And then it crystallized for me. It's every high school basketball player you know that was like 6'5 or 6'6 was a very good high school basketball player, but there's just no position for them in college or pros. And so all these guys are somewhere between 6'5 and 6'8, and they all are really athletic. And then when you watch a guy that can just absolutely rip it as a serve, it starts to become very, very intoxicating to watch.
Even to see someone dive and dig out. To me, that's as incredible.
Well, and then you see how hard they hit the ball and the fact that guys can still react and like make plays. Like it is definitely one of those sports. But to me, it's like, okay, I don't feel like I've quite found the answer that's satisfying. Doesn't mean that any of these things are wrong, but it's like there's something a little more there, because I think if you can take all of these things, but I'm more curious as to the sustainability of it. Because normally, like, we'll see it all the time with TV shows, with movie franchises. Like, when we just kind of check out on something, we'll just kind of check out. And everyone likes to then try to, media in particular, likes to try to make it some type of, like, societal issue, whatnot. It's like, no, we just kind of checked out. Like, that's what I pay attention to, is when are we checking out?
But don't discount the fact that as Americans, U.S., as you're watching these events, you're among the leaders in all the medals from the start, and it makes you feel good as a country. I think that has a lot to do with people enjoying it.
So that was what my next point would be, which is it this yearning? Because it seems, in particular, I would say really the last 8 to 10 years, it's just not been really fun to call yourself an American. And I've always thought that was sad. And, like, I'm always someone that, because I have lived in other places, I've been overseas a lot, like, it's one of those things that starts to crystallize really quickly. It's like, I can appreciate other things about other cultures, but it's like, I am proud to be an American. Like, yeah, this is an experiment. This is an idea, and it's got flaws, but it's like, overall, I'd rather give it a shot here than some of the other places that I've been. And so maybe it was a combination of everyone kind of collectively realizing, like, we probably cared a little too much about politics the last 8 years or so. Like, we probably got a little too wrapped up into it. Like, when you start really paying attention to, like, what people say or what politicians say, how they act, what they do, and you're like, oh yeah, this is Veep. This isn't House of Cards. Like, it's kind of an S show. And so maybe there's this moment of time where you're like, okay, I just kind of want to root for my guys again and root for my country. I think that's there. I would also point out, and I'd give credits to my wife, because I don't know if I'd really ever thought of it in these terms. Is there another country that can actually chant their country? Like, we do have USA, and it's awesome, and it delivers any and every time, but it's not like you can be like, Great Britain, Great Britain. Like, you're never hearing anyone going like, Viva la France. Or I think the closest, it seemed like Germany, and a couple of things I've watched, they've tried to get Deutschland, Deutschland, Deutschland. And the problem is, it's like, guys, I know Deutschland's been there longer, but it's like, you get a room of Germans chanting Deutschland, like, our brains go to a certain place. And it's not really, like, a good place. And so I do think it helps that we have, like, a really awesome chant. It's fun. And I don't see how other countries can really replicate it, because we have three letters that makes it super easy.
Are you not captivated by, again, the stories that develop during the course of 2 weeks? I mean, you know, they do as much as they can to promote the Olympics, and they do incredible stories and research, but even more develop as the competition plays out.
I would say yes and no. So where I would say what I do find fascinating is, like, the stories of the beach volleyball team where the two girls played beach volleyball at LSU, and, like, hearing their story. One has always just been a beach volleyball player. The other originally went to Creighton, played indoor volleyball, and kind of them coming together, forming a friendship, whatnot. Something that I've found that I do not care about one way or the other, I am very much out on every sport insisting that their star has become like the greatest and you should bow. Like, I'm not here for that. Like, in the end, it's like, do I think Simone Biles has done things I've never seen a gymnast do? Yes, I do. I still can't get out of my head that I've seen someone else do things that I've never seen been able to do. And he has 28 medals, 21 which are gold. It's the same thing. It's like when people are trying to force feed that someone is the greatest of all time. It's like, I just don't really particularly care. And it starts to get to the point where I've always used with Jeff, the lady doth protest too much. Like when you're just force feeding me the same line that so-and-so's the GOAT, so-and-so's the GOAT. And if you don't think so, like you're a hater, you're wrong. It's like, I don't know. Like, I mean, how are we defining greatness? Like, I don't know. Simone Biles is clearly something different. When the rest of her sport sits there in awe of her, it's the same thing of like when you see peak of his powers LeBron and you watch the way other players revered him, like that matters to me. But at the same time, am I here? It's kind of like I like poking fun at the whole because both sides just get so butthurt. I don't really particularly care about the Jordan versus LeBron debate. And I also acknowledge people that are, people have a legitimate claim. Bill Russell has a legitimate claim. Like, I've never been one for, I don't think eras are capable of being compared. The sports are too different. And B, I don't, like, that's not who they're up against. They're up against who they're competing against. Like, in the end, Simone Biles is not going up against Michael Phelps. Like, they're not competing against each other. But I get very turned off by the incessant, you have to think this way.
Well, this is where I think this is probably a little bit inside something that like in the media you might kind of keep up with. But for the women's gymnastics, there's a former gymnast, and I think her name's Fernandez. I don't know if you know that, but she's been an analyst for the coverage, and this is what I like. She's telling you more than what you normally see.
Layla.
And what she does
oh,
is...
Oh, no, that's a tennis player.
Oh. But what she does is she's telling you things that, and she's letting you see things that you would not normally see. And it brings you more into the competition.
Laurie Hernandez. With all due respect.
Okay. So if you do that, if you watch and you learn, and above what you're saying where someone's telling you they're the greatest of all time, she's telling you, watch this person line up. And I can tell you if she's nervous by the way she's, you know, by the way she's standing. I mean, those little things, I love that.
I am 100% with you. Because one of the things, I think truly one of the biggest reasons why I watch sports is having played sports, and even at like the smallest level, I don't care if you're an 11-year-old up with two outs, your team's down one, the bases are loaded. It is fascinating to me to watch how pitcher reacts, how hitter reacts, how everybody in the field reacts, because everybody can feel that moment. And to me, part of what differentiates the greats from the very goods is how do they behave, how do they react, how do they perform under pressure? And because I think it's the hardest thing to do in sports. It's the same reason why, like, I think shooting free throws is fascinating. It's always 15 feet, with the exception of playing 3-on-3 outdoors. You're always indoors. There's no elements. It's you in the basket. It's the same ball, same size hoop. It's always the same distance. And watching what pressure does to guys that can probably hit close to 100 in a row in an empty gym. But you throw the pressure in the moment. It's the same reason why, like in golf, watching a guy have to hit a 5-footer to either win or to force a playoff, like, it's enthralling. Pressure is what I think differentiates the greats from the very goods, and it's why I'm always fascinated. If they can explain exactly, like, all right, here's where this person might be feeling it, I'm with you entirely.
Yeah, I mean, it's the quote you always hear from coaches is, he's made for this moment.
Yes.
And there are those that are, and you would, you know, they're the kind of, you may not think that, but then when it's crunch time, they love it, and they just... Success. They're succeeding in that moment.
I mean, it goes back to yesterday when we were talking about Mahomes being fourth on that list. Like, I'm sorry, y'all. I've seen I have seen Lamar Jackson in big playoff moments.
Yeah.
You can feel him get tight. You can see him miss throws that he doesn't miss in normal circumstances.
As for Mahomes?
Fourth quarter, when he gets the ball, you're just like, well, this is over.
Yeah.
And again, sometimes it's not batting 1,000. But to me, when you have that reaction of, oh, crap, he's got the ball. Oh, crap, she's got the ball. That's what matters.
Yeah.
When you're truly, if you're on the other side and you know that that person gets their chance and you're terrified, that to me is a big sign of greatness.
It's Tom Brady. It's Joe Montana. 100%. Yeah.
I mean, Brady didn't go undefeated in Super Bowls. Did anyone feel good when he got the ball down three with one possession left? I mean, no. I mean, like I was on the Giants had that exact situation twice, and I swear to God, on the second one, if Gronk doesn't have the beat-up ankle, on the first one, Randy Moss almost damn near caught the Hail Mary. Like, it was on his fingertips, whatnot. And that was about as, like, low percentage. It was like a 75-yard throw in the like, but you're still convinced, like, oh, my God, there's time on the clock. And this is what matters. Same thing when he threw the Hail Mary. It's like he missed, barely missed, like, two throws by about a couple of fingertips. But it's the same thing. It's like that is what makes those guys. I mean, Montana has the unfair example of undefeated in Super Bowls, but it's the same thing. How do you think Bengals fans felt when he got the ball back?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it is. It's like, to me, it's why I struggle with guys like Curt Schilling, where I think in my mind, I would vote Curt Schilling into the Hall of Fame simply because I don't really care that you were just a slightly above average regular season pitcher. When you got the ball in the games that mattered the most, and you really can't tell the history of baseball without Curt Schilling, it's like, how is that not a Hall of Famer?
It is.
I mean,
yeah.
Bumgarner's the one where I kind of like, but it's kind of the same thing. It's like, I don't know, there's just something about people with the moments. So I bring all that up as to say is like, is there something that we can take out? Is there something that we can maybe like have a thesis statement of why this works and is it applicable to anything else? Because I can make the case right now, the single biggest reason why this matters is look at where it is on the summer calendar.
It's huge.
This happens every 4 years. You are watching the greatest athletes in the world at what they do in a very short burst. And it's the ultimate pop in, pop out moment.
And ultimately, I'm going back to this, it makes you feel good when it's over. I mean, for the most part, you're successful as Americans this time of year. And it does. I mean, whether it's the stories or the competition, you feel good when you turn the TV off at night.
And that's where I think there's a key question. Is a big problem that we have now as we watch college sports that we know too much? And oftentimes, I kind of think when you say we know too much, that's a little, I think it's a little arrogant, because I think it implies like we're smarter now than we were before. I would make this case. We see too much.
See too much. You got 24/7 social media.
And think about it. How many different outlets cover every team? I mean, what, we have the DM, the CA, 24/7. I believe Rivals still covers the Tigers on 3. Tri-State. I mean, what? I just named at least 7 different. Oh, school paper?
School paper.
We're talking at least 8 outlets that cover one school. So, Hitman Hoops, like Twitter. I mean, there's, we now have this new phenomenon of like Twitter newsbreakers. And so, it's almost overcovered. Our teams are to a point where it's overcovered. But I think the real problem is, I think when you take the step back and you're like, okay, what can we do to fix this? I think the biggest thing, like the biggest through line that I see is there has to be an acknowledgement that we've now reached the point where really the only thing that we care about is game day. The competition, if you want to define it as rivalry games, big games, game day. But to me, it's the games themselves. And it seems to me that we're bringing up things that I think are legitimate issues, but I think the problem is it's a lot of let's throw a lot of mud and kind of distract everyone from keeping, quote unquote, the main thing the main thing.
Which seems to me you're almost bringing up the example of the roller coaster ride of the stock market.
Yes.
And you're thinking about it, and you can't do that every second of what's going on.
100%.
You wait till the end. You wait for a defined period of time, and then you can talk about your team or your finances.
Correct. 100%. Like, if you're focused on what happened today, and then you're ignoring the fact that I've still made 11% on my portfolio, it's like, okay, well, I get it. Like, you're upset about today, and like I understand that. But I think that also kind of comes back to a larger point that I see is it feels like those that actually have the power to do something about this, A, they're holding on for dear life, and B, they're not accepting reality, and they think that this is a battle that can be won with messaging, and that's just not the case. Like, to me, it's like, I'm not delving into politics, but to me it's like you can have everyone tell you Biden is out of it, you can have people tell you Biden's in it, like he's as sharp as a tack, everything. That moment that he gets on stage and we see him, it doesn't matter after that. Like, we saw that. You can't unsee that. And to me, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, you can think that you have this fabulous, wonderful messaging, but like, we see the byproducts. We watch rosters that we don't know. We watch, you know, conferences in chaos. We don't know what our schedule is going to look like. We don't even know. Does high school recruiting matter anymore? Does the portal matter? Like, we just have all of this chaos, and it's like, until there is some acceptance of we have to get our competition in order, and we have to start with that, and we have to accept that's what everyone cares about, I think we're just going to keep doing the song and dance.
Yeah, I think people breathe a sigh of relief once the season begins.
Yes, no.
It's like, okay, we're here.
Cobb, who's going to join us next, I mean, I remember vividly, I think this might even been pre-pandemic. I was doing a BetQL show that, like, basically I'm sitting there live watching games for 4 hours, and Cobb just comes on one day as a guest to try and fill 15 minutes, and we just realized at that moment, it's like, man, we really don't like college football Sunday through Friday, but God, there is just nothing better than Saturday. Like, you're just sitting there, you got 60 something games, you got teams you care about, teams you don't care about, but it's like, there is something about game day that it is just still the best. But it almost feels like the more and more we start focusing on everything else, the less and less we are focused on, hey man, if we don't pay attention to our actual product, That's where people are going to check out. And when people start checking out, it's really hard to get them to check back in. See boxing. See baseball. I mean, horse racing. Everything that has at once been had a claim to the focal point of American society. Like, I really, really fear that it hasn't shown yet, because the numbers still show we still care about Saturdays. But if they let this thing continue, and they can't figure out a way to make us keep spending money and still going, I think we're just doing the song and dance forever.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's got so much momentum over the decades. I mean, it's going to take a lot to knock it down. People will adjust to this era we're in. It'll continue to create great commercials for Dr. Pepper.
There's no question.
I mean, so we'll see. I think people will adjust for a while, and then we'll see what goes on from there.
So I almost wonder, though, I think no matter what, an Ohio State-Alabama game is going to matter. Yeah. I think if you put that on, that's going to matter. The question that I have is, at what point when we're watching Memphis and Charlotte for the 17th straight year in a row, and you know, Memphis is a 24-point favorite, like, how much are we still caring? Like it, because to me, there's these. It's what we're seeing is, I think where everyone is if you're going to, if you're going to eventually get to this world where we have basically two power conferences and we're going to have the AFC, NFC, I think most people are just at the point, it's like, go ahead and merge. Because there's still going to be, like, let them do their thing. Let's figure out everyone else that still cares about sports and let's give them somewhere to play, play meaningful games. And if we want to figure out whether or not there's a path for them to compete at the highest level and have, like, I guess I would use the example of Sankey always points out European soccer. And he used to point it out for the reasons of tradition and programs that have mattered and whatnot. I think what he might have actually stumbled upon is in European soccer, there are teams that matter and leagues that matter and leagues that don't, but people still go. Like, do you stumble upon the English Premier League? Okay, it's still going to be the creme de la creme. Maybe they don't have the best team in the world, but their league is clearly the best league. All right, well, we've got the Spanish league where basically two to three teams are just beating the hell out of everyone. Same kind of holds true for the German league. The Italian league's kind of having money issues, but it's the same thing. But then we get everybody together and we play some other big tournament. Like, is maybe that the better path of, let's have some divisions and whatnot that make sense. And then if we want to bring all the big money stuff together at the end and play a big tournament, like, let's do that. But it just seems like we're creating more and more games that fewer and fewer people care about in general, but you're going to have these, like, big name blockbusters. It's almost kind of like the movie business where it's like, we don't see a $60 million comedy anymore, but, like, we will see, you know, 8 to 10 $400 million movies.
And as long as that movie makes money, and as long as that college football enterprise makes money, then you'll continue to see it.
That's, in the end, we do it to ourselves. All right, let's talk a little college football. We'll do that next with David Cobb, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Cobb, we'll get to the poll in just a minute. I'm curious to know, when you heard that Pete Thamel had obtained a copy of the draft of the notice of allegations, What was your first reaction against Michigan, I should say?
Well, yeah, I mean, from a journalistic perspective, you're like, all right, yeah, I wonder where he got that from. Who gave that to him? But, no, when you dig into it a little bit, it's, you know, it's not great for Michigan. Like, the fact that this is still hanging over their head now 3 weeks out from the beginning of college football season, they're still dealing with this when this was supposed to be the NCAA's fast-track investigation. I think what probably sticks out to me more than anything is just how Jim Harbaugh got the heck up out of there right before things hit the fan. And I think that's what he just left Sherrone Moore there to handle this. Like, that's what sticks out to me more than anything.
Have you ever, because I guess it's, like, I think about the investigations that you and I have covered. There's always leaks, and you always pay attention to when someone writes a particular thing, because you're like, oh, that's the NCAA, or that's the school trying to get their messaging out. I got to tell you, that was the first time in my memory that I can remember that not a leak of the notice of allegations, because I've known a dogged reporter or two to be able to get a copy of the received notice of allegations. I've never heard of the draft getting leaked.
Right. It makes you wonder where it came from. Like,
I don't wonder.
And the fact that it came out on a Sunday, kind of strange as well. You know, maybe they got it from the NCAA. I don't know, but
I guess, yeah, it's conceivable. I guess the question I always ask is, because my assumption is it comes from the NCAA, because part of their MO is they want you having to deal with it to be a part of the punishment, and like you having to take the public beating. But if we want to play it out, who is someone at Michigan that would have any incentive leaking that out? Because I would say, like, okay, what if, like, Sherrone's agent has it or the school legal team? I just don't see any benefit of them leaking it. Because that's the other thing. I do agree with you on Harbaugh getting the heck out of Dodge. Like, it is a Pete Carroll. Like, oh, why is he going to the NFL now? Well, he just wants a new opportunity. He wants a new challenge. At the same time, hiring Sherrone, from most people that were following it, they kind of viewed that as Michigan doubling down because they knew Sherrone was going to be implicated. So,
right, yeah.
It just seems to me it has to come from the enforcement staff.
Well, and to your point, though, on Sherrone Moore, you wonder if they had hired outside the family, if they could have avoided the brunt of whatever the punishment is going to be from the NCAA. But you're right, they doubled down. And that was another thought that crossed my mind when this dropped, and I had to write something on this. And it's basically this idea that if they had gone with a non-Michigan hire, then they could have washed their hands of this whole thing to a certain extent, or maybe just gotten a slap on the wrist. But they doubled down. They hired somebody who was Jim Harbaugh's right-hand man. So they have nothing to hide behind now when the NCAA comes to enforce these violations, because everybody, you know, who is a part of that staff now, for the most part, was involved in all of this. And they had the perfect opportunity to turn the page, put all this behind him, and essentially do what Tennessee did when they hired Josh Heupel and say, hey, he wasn't a part of anything Jeremy Pruitt did. Don't punish this staff. Don't punish these players. This is a new program. But you can't say that at Michigan now, because it's the same program. It's just an elevated coach who was on Harbaugh's staff. So in some ways, they kind of chose to have this fight with the NCAA, because it would have been very easy to just hire somebody else and be done with it.
It also makes you wonder if Michigan is just taking the approach of, sure, they can do whatever they want. We're going to just take them to court.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the NCAA is pretty horrendous in court these days. But do we really think they're going to try to strip their national title or give them a postseason ban? I don't know. It just seems to me like Michigan would fight either of those things so hard that it really wouldn't even be worth the NCAA's time. Because, I mean, let's be real, Jeffrey. Michigan was so dominant that they would have won the national title even if they hadn't cheated. And so I that's what it comes back to for me. It's like, you didn't need Connor Stallions to give you Michigan State signs to go out and beat Michigan State. You would have pummeled Michigan State even if you'd been playing that game without any scouting whatsoever. So it was so unnecessary, too. I mean, Michigan didn't need to do all this to be the best team in college football last year.
No, and then it's like, you also think about it, it's why I have, like, a lot of respect for Sonny Dykes. Like, when they asked him about, you know, the sign-stealing things, like, yeah, we made adjustments. And to which I interpreted that as, yeah, we just changed our signs. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, in the end, this largely stems from the fact that Ryan Day took such offense to the third base comments and can't beat Michigan now. And it all starts with, well, they're stealing signs, when it's like, well, everybody's stealing signs. And yes, they went to a absurd level and they got caught. That's the other thing. Like, I always point out, like, it was what I would always say when Ole Miss was having their investigations. Like, everyone would point out, well, it's $800, the loaner car, $800, whatnot. It's like, you got caught. That's the problem. You got caught. You were sloppy. You got caught. That's what you're going to get punished for. But then it just always comes back to me. It's like, is the NCAA going to really have the power to punish? And I'm curious at that, because they basically acknowledge publicly they want to hand off this stuff to conferences.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the Big Ten has already adjudicated the Michigan sign stealing scandal. It took them about 2 months or less than that, whereas the NCAA's, quote, fast track is still ongoing almost a year later. And I think what we could ultimately see is another suspension, which at the same, like, by one token, it's like, all right, what does the suspension even really mean for Michigan? Jim Harbaugh was suspended on two occasions for multiple games last season and didn't hurt him at all. I actually think a suspension might be a reasonable punishment for Sherrone Moore, and it might actually have a little teeth this time, because you know what? There's actually some decent opposition on their schedule when you realize that they play Texas in week two and USC in week four. So, yeah, maybe if the NCAA is going to do anything here, it would be a suspension. And I actually think that seems like a reasonable punishment, because it would actually put Michigan in a kind of tough spot if that were early in the season.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to go back to your Tennessee recruiting days, because this story did kind of catch my attention. Tennessee picks up Faison Brandon, top 2026 quarterback recruit. But I'm also, just because I have to cover MUS, what does this mean for George McIntyre at Brentwood? Who, I'll say Brentwood because that upsets him. They always correct, it's Brentwood Academy. It's BA. It's Brentwood to me. Because I find that fascinating. We don't normally see back-to-back, like, high-profile guys, but like, I applaud Tennessee, like, to a certain degree. It's like, hey, you can't worry about that. But at the same time, it's like, does that mean that George McIntyre now becomes back on the board?
That's a great point. Like, by one hand, Heupel's being lauded for his quarterback recruiting, and that's so true, because now you've gone Nico in class of 23, then you got Jake Merklinger, who's a true freshman this year, who they really like, four-star, you know, to one of the top 15 quarterbacks in the country, and then you add in McIntyre from Brentwood, and now you got the top junior quarterback in the country right now too. So that's four straight years of, like, highly, highly touted quarterback prospects who are either four or five star guys. But the deal is, I mean, this Faison Brandon commitment that they've picked up, I mean, he is the number one overall prospect, period, in the class of 2026. Not the number one quarterback, not the number one player in the state of North Carolina. He is the number one player. And that is something Tennessee has never had before. Eric Berry was number two or number three, depending on where you look. Bryce Brown, who committed under Lane Kiffin at running back, and you know, but back 15 years ago, he was the number two overall guy in the composite. So it's a pretty significant pickup for them. But it could mean that, you know, George McIntyre has to fight for his job, which is wild because he was hailed as the successor to Nico. But if you can get a guy like this to commit, I mean, you take it. And you, you know, you're George McIntyre, you're probably looking around a little bit and saying, well, hold on a second. I thought I was going to be the guy. But I mean, I think it just goes to show how eager quarterbacks are to play in that system. I think that quarterback-friendly Heupel offense that a lot of other teams run, that Jeff Lebby's going to run at Mississippi State, it's fun. It's a great system for QBs to play in.
All right, we got to look at the USLBM coaches poll, and we got Stukenborg here with us. I have now determined that USLBM is apparently a building supplier. At first, I was like, is that a financial? When I start hearing random letters, I just think, like, oh, that's like an investment bank or that's some kind of financial institution. But we got to look at our first top 25, the coaches poll. What stood out to you, positive, negatively? Like, what grabbed your attention when you started reading through the names?
Okay, well, if you want to go local with it, I mean, Memphis is the top Group of Five team. They are not in the top 25, but in the others receiving votes category, they came in ahead of Boise, and they came in ahead of Liberty. So you see Memphis.
Yeah. You sound surprised, David.
Well, you know, it's worth noting. I have Boise State slightly ahead of Memphis, like in the Group of Five power ranking. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. But Memphis being there, I think, is a sign of the national respect that they're getting. I've noticed a shift even in the last 6 weeks that the national focus on Group of Five football right now is really starting to center on Memphis and even above and beyond Boise State. So that certainly stuck out to me a little bit to see Memphis as the top Group of Five team. And then, I mean, other than that, you know, there are some nitpicks here and there, teams that were too high, too low. But I'm not one to get overly offended or outraged by a preseason poll, because this stuff will all sort itself out in short order.
Well, and that's kind of the larger question. Also, to your point, I did some crack research with the help of Phil. I've determined that I feel confident in this statement. It's the highest they've been ranked in the preseason coaches poll in a year in which every team declared that they were playing college football. So they were technically fifth in others receiving back in the COVID poll. So the 2020 right. preseason poll, but that was at a time when not everyone had declared they were playing. So everyone had been moved up. This is higher than 04, higher than 17, higher than 19. This is the highest they've been ranked preseason wise. But I do agree with you. It does feel like we've kind of lost some of like the old institutional days, it feels like, of being a college football fan, in which like signing day clearly it's clearly diminished. Like, to act as if it's an unimportant day maybe is a stretch, but like in terms of our attention to it, it's been diminished. I think the release of the rankings is very much in that category. And I think it's because we've kind of just decided like it kind of ends up sorting itself out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, without a doubt. My qualms with this poll are the fact that USC is ranked at all. You know, that's a head-scratcher for me. Arizona is another team in the 20s that I'm not sure should be ranked. Washington as the number one team and others receiving votes. That's weird to me because they are replacing a ton.
You probably did because you have to keep track. But I should have known this, but I didn't. I feel like I realized it last week. Will Rogers is the starting quarterback at Washington?
Right. Yeah, he actually committed under Kalen DeBoer and then stayed through the Jed Fish transition. So that's kind of weird to me. Like, I don't know that he fits Jed Fish perfectly.
I will say that Will played Arizona twice.
Yeah, so, I mean, he had the chance to scout Will Rogers in person. And, I mean, I trust Jed Fish with quarterbacks. I wouldn't have pegged Will Rogers as, like, the Jed Fish quarterback. But my man knows how to sling the football around. He certainly proved that at State.
David, you know, when you're talking about Memphis, tell me this. Do you think the biggest challenge for Ryan Silverfield and the Tigers is the pressure of being ranked and being seen as the number one team to get in the playoff of the Group of Five?
Gotta be. I mean, that's such uncharted territory for this program. And then you get a early season test against Florida State where you got to go and show the whole country that you deserve that recognition and that you deserve that spot as the G5 favorite. But you can look at it as an opportunity, because look, even if Memphis loses that game at Florida State, even if they get blown out, let's just say, hypothetically, in Tallahassee, maybe they'll disappear from the national spotlight for the rest of September and October. But keep an eye on them, because they're in the second half of November. If they're taking care of business in the AAC, they're still going to have an opportunity to claim that automatic bid. So really, I mean, that Florida State game is nothing more than a showcase opportunity. And if you lose it, you go down there, you get embarrassed, so what? You still have everything that you're striving for in front of you. And if you go down there and you push them down to the wire, or you pull an upset, then the hype just goes into overdrive, into a place that we've never seen or maybe haven't seen since College Game Day was in town, you know, something on that type of level. So, yeah, it's that the managing of expectations, the managing of pressure That is as big of a challenge as anything that Ryan Silverfield faces on the field this year.
I mean, I think you can kind of make the same case, right, for Ole Miss. Like, to me, the same thing applies where, you know, if you don't end up – now, granted, it's not national title or bust, but, like, I do think the fan base has more or less bought into, like, this is a playoff team. If you go 9-3 and miss the playoff, like, I don't know, like, what the resume is going to show. And, like, I can see where you're sitting there at the end going, like, okay, now what?
Because it feels like Ole Miss has really pushed in all the chips.
Yeah.
This year, to the extent where, like, maybe some of the money they are using on this roster is money that won't always be available. You know, they are spending on the 2025 and 2026 salary cap to bolster.
They're New Orleans Sainting this. That's what the Saints. Like, they're getting a credit card to pay. They're getting another credit card to pay this credit card.
Exactly. And so, if you don't cash it in, then it's obviously super disappointing. But I'm a big believer in Ole Miss. I think they should be ranked ahead of Alabama, which they are not. But I think they should be when you look at the continuity, when you look at the transfer additions, when you look at all the change at Alabama. That is, to me, the pecking order in the SEC. It's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss. Alabama not far behind, but I really...
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.